I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about 10 bucks a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. Previously on Anything's Possible.
People are going to expect from you to open the door to the unexpected.
You are a great storyteller and you're a great writer and you're very smart, but like you even say you're not a chef.
Before 1949, there's no trace of a pasta dish known as carbonara.
They're fighting over whether or not to cook the pasta in advance, or they're fighting over whether or not to scrape the bottom of the pan?
They're just fighting for everything.
Becky, how would you describe how this looks?
This kind of looks like a cry for help.
I gotta be honest, I think I'm getting tired of eating pasta.
I think you're crossing over into culinary territory, chefdom.
I know that this cookbook has been a lot of work for me and that's created stress for everybody, and I'm sorry for that. Is it worth it?
Depends on the pasta.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. This is the final episode of Anything's Possible, a four-part series giving you the inside story of the making of my first cookbook. By the end, you'll never look at a cookbook the same way again. If you haven't listened to parts 1 through 3 yet, please go back and start there. A few quick notes before we get into it. Anything's Possible, the cookbook, comes out tomorrow, March 19th, but of course it's available right now to order wherever books are sold. And I'm hitting the road for a series of live Sporkful tapings that are also going to be book signing events, and I hope to see you there. Listen to this lineup. I mean, come on. New York City tonight, March 18th, in conversation with Claire Saffitz. Long Island tomorrow with Top Chef's Gail Simmons, followed by Chicago with the Korean vegan Joanne Lee Molinaro, then Twin Cities, Atlanta, Miami, D.C., and more. You can get all the dates and details at Sporkful.com/tour. And now, the series finale of Anything's Possible. We're starting somewhere a little unexpected.
So this is one of my favorite spots because you literally never know what you're going to see.
This is Jillian Knox. She's a food and prop stylist in San Francisco.
I think like being a prop stylist is really fascinating because your palette is objects. Your palette and like how you paint is like through objects.
Jillian is at the San Pablo Flea Market. It's an outdoor salvage yard. She's here with her husband, Elvis Santoyo, who helps her out on a lot of projects.
There's these, like, bins. All the bins have dishes and cups, and there's plates, like, stacked up into these bins. And, you know, stuff sits here for a long time, and then all of a sudden you discover it.
It's January 2023, and the reason Jillian's here is me. I've hired her as the food and prop stylist for the photos in my cookbook. She'll also be the art director, so she's in charge of creating the book's visual aesthetic. She and I have already had some conversations about how we want the book to look. Now, the photo shoot is a month away, and Jillian is spending hours scouring flea markets and salvage yards to find just the right props. Of course, that means the plates and glassware you'll see in the photos, but also little items that could appear on the side or in the background.
It's a porcelain egg holder for your fridge. But I love things like this because you can set it on the side of, like, a countertop. It just tells the story a little bit better. Just these, like, hints of life, I think, are, like, kind of necessary for these projects. And then you read the recipe and the story, and it all just, like, comes together. And I think you're able to, like, really soak in that story more than just making a pretty image of food.
At one point, Jillian finds a whole door that she likes. She's also looking for tabletops. She prefers them without the legs. Makes it easier to manipulate them for a photo shoot. And then there's the tile. Jillian can take a dozen pieces of tile, lay them out flat on a board, and in a close-up photo, it'll look like a tile countertop. In her work, Jillian uses a lot of tile.
What is that? 3x3 squares, but they're either marble or concrete. What does this box say?
It says marble.
Yeah, so they're like tumbled marble, and that's kind of how you get smooth and matte and rough at the same time. So I'm going to fill up a crate, man. These are dope. I just love them so much. They're so useful, and they just photograph so beautifully, you know?
You've got 53 in here.
Sick. Okay, cool. Just here, let's put a fourth one, 54. That's for good luck. All right.
All this work that Jillian's doing means we've arrived at the final stage of creating my cookbook, photography and design, turning a bunch of Google Docs of recipes and stories into something with a cohesive visual style. Now, of course, that means making the food look delicious, but frankly, that's not that hard. There are a million people on Instagram doing it every day without scouring flea markets, right? Great food styling expresses something more about the recipes and the person behind them. I spent months meeting with potential photographers and stylists, and nothing was really clicking. Then, one day, I was getting ready to interview Ileana Masonette about her cookbook, Diasporican. I was looking through it and thinking, I love the photography in here. It's got so much personality. I love that there are crumpled paper napkins next to plates of half-finished food, crumbs on the table, hands coming in to grab things, crushed beer cans. It wasn't messy, just real. It made me feel like there was a real person behind the book. And that is how I found Jillian. She was the food and prop stylist for Ileana's book, and one of the photographers she worked with on that book was Dan Liberti. Now they're both part of the increasingly large team of people who are helping to make my cookbook happen.
Can we do a couple more tries and get a little more tomato?
Yes. Let me add some more. All right, cool.
You got a shot.
Jillian and Dan are based in the Bay Area. So in February 2023, I fly out there and meet them at Dan's photo studio. It's a small converted apartment, so it's got a kitchen, which of course is key. When I arrive, they're already at work. And right away, I see Jillian's talents on display. There's some crumbs that made it onto the cutting board. There's some little spills here and there. But in order to make those crumbs look just right... I saw you employ tweezers.
Yes.
At least one brush.
Yes.
Then you guys looked at it. You were like, oh, those crumbs don't look right.
Yeah, the crumbs are in a straight line. We cannot do that.
Right, because that's not how crumbs get spilled.
They're too perfect. Right. Exactly.
Do you enjoy that part of it?
I do.
What do you enjoy about it?
I mean, I can just be as like hyper-focused on the smallest thing. And I just think it's so fun, like to just be like... I don't like that sesame seed. You know?
So Jillian's placing every single sesame seed to ensure that they don't look like they've been individually placed. Meanwhile, our photographer, Dan, is thinking about lighting.
We decided to go for a fairly hard light, and that means you're going to have crispy shadows. We want it to look like it's in somebody's house, and typically people's houses have one light source, whether that's a window or like a pendant light.
So we're going for normal people vibes.
Normal people vibes.
Real food for real people.
Like, I feel like oftentimes when pasta or Italian food is depicted in cookbooks, it's meant more like to transport you to Italy. And there's the hills of Tuscany and the Nona's caked in flour.
Right.
And that's beautiful and all, but like, we're not trying to transport people to Tuscany.
Right. We're trying to transport to the couch. That's where we're going.
We budgeted 8 days for the photo shoot, which is tight. We need to photograph 75 dishes, which means cooking 75 dishes, having them ready at the right times, and figuring out how each one should be presented. That's a lot of cooking and styling. But Jillian won't be doing it alone. Fellow food stylist Melina Savoravong has also joined the team. She drove up from LA for the shoot. Jillian and Melina are cooking each dish so they look true to the recipes. And that means we won't be using some of the food photography tricks you may have heard of, like filling a bowl of cereal with glue instead of milk so the cereal doesn't sink into the bowl. Jillian insists that every dish remain completely edible and actually delicious because she doesn't like to waste food. She's brought boxes and boxes of plates, glasses, utensils, napkins, tile, and other tabletops. It's all stacked up, filling the entryway of the studio. So once again, the process will require a seemingly infinite number of tiny decisions. What kind of plate should this pasta be on? What kind of glass should be next to it? Is it a fancy wine glass? A pint of beer? Are the utensils set just so, or are they a bit off kilter? Has someone already taken a bite of the food? I know you may not notice all these details when you look through a cookbook, but I promise they affect how the book makes you feel. Periodically, Jillian asks me, what's the situation when you're eating this dish? Where are you? Who are you with? This helps her to create a scene using all her props. All this is a lot of work. And in 8 days, Melina and I are going home. Jillian and Dan are moving on to their next projects. We've got to get it right.
Looking, cool. I'm good with it. You want to 5-star that one?
Yep.
Make it green.
So when you say 5-star, that means like highlight that one as the
that's
one?
That's our select.
Did I just witness our first successful photograph?
Yeah.
Wow.
First one of the book.
Only 612 more to go.
Right.
In my experience on TV shoots, on the very first day, everyone's like, let's take some time and do 3 different versions of this to make it look really beautiful. And then by the end of the third day, everyone's like, screw it, just click record and get on to the next one. We're 2 hours late.
100% absolutely accurate. Yeah.
Even though a ton of planning has gone into this shoot, Jillian and Dan told me that a lot of decisions would be made on the fly. There are some things you just can't figure out till you can see them in front of you. On the first day, we set up to shoot a pasta salad with cavatelli, fresh corn, tomatoes, ricotta salata, and mozzarella. The warm pasta just barely cooks the corn, so the kernels are still crunchy and juicy. It's all a little creamy, but also sweet and summery. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways Jillian and Dan sometimes make a scene feel more real is to show the dish somewhat in process. In this case, Jillian wants to have a few of the corn cobs stripped of their kernels sitting next to the bowl. But there's a problem.
Are they in the garbage?
Yes. But I do have corn.
We can rinse them off.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's fine.
That's a food styling trick right there.
Yeah.
Going through the garbage.
Exactly. Just, you know.
This is live audio of Melina looking through the garbage. I'll help you dig, Melina.
Okay. I should wear gloves.
No.
There we go. Oh,
we got
them.
Not
even that bad.
No, these are in good shape. That doesn't even really count as the garbage.
I'll still rinse them, though.
Okay, we're going to be fancy. People are going to see this cookbook. I want you to know, when you see the corn cobs and the cavatelli and corn tomato salad, Melina and Jillian and I took those out of the garbage and washed them off for the picture.
Sure did.
Corn cobs in place, Jillian sets up an action shot. She wants to capture the bowl of pasta being mixed, but we got to make sure you can see all the ingredients clearly. She arranges everything on that tumbled marble she found at the salvage yard, placed so it looks like a countertop. Dan shoots some photos, they adjust, he shoots some more. We take a look at the shots on his monitor. That one or I think that one.
That's good.
I think that's
the
one.
There's a nice little hunk of mozzarella
you get
in there.
It's all there.
It's just cascading down.
Yeah.
Ugh, I love it.
Now, just so I have it for the record, Dan, how many test shots were there? Just like setting up the lighting and everything and getting the lighting right?
Yeah. 35.
And then once Jillian started scooping and we actually were trying to get the scoop just right and the cascading, how many shots did we take?
63.
And in the end, we ended up with 1.
But it's the one.
But it's so good. It's really good.
Exactly.
After the first few photos, we start to get into a rhythm. As shots are finalized, Dan prints them out and hangs them on the wall of the studio, organized by chapter. This gives us a big picture look at what we've done so far and ensures that we vary the styles and setups and colors as we go. I'm also learning that since every dish we photograph needs to be cooked, this process doubles as one final extra recipe test. Sometimes Melina or Jillian is confused by an instruction or something isn't coming out quite right. So I open up my laptop and make small tweaks to wording as we go. I'm trying to make sure every recipe will be foolproof. Several days in, I take a walk through Berkeley. I'm extremely happy with how it's going. It's been incredibly exciting just to see. First of all, some of these dishes I cooked 8 months ago. So to see them again and taste them again and see how good they are again is very exciting. But then also just like to see them brought to life by these super talented folks who not only cook them, but also make them look so beautiful. That's really exciting and very gratifying. Makes the book feel more real. I can really kind of like picture thumbing through it now. Halfway through the shoot, we have a guest assistant joining us. Recipe developer Asha Loopy, a.k.a. the Saucy Spicetress. She happens to live in Oakland and knows her way around a cookbook shoot. She's here to help with a very special dish.
Today, we're shooting the keema bolognese, which is my favorite recipe.
We shared some of Asha's story in an episode in February. We heard about how she cooked the Indian dish keema a lot when she was a kid. The spiced ground meat of keema mashes up perfectly with Italian bolognese sauce. And you brought in a specific pot.
I did.
For it to be depicted in.
Brought in a handmade curry pot that's from Teepoy. And it is a traditional clay pot to cook in. And it's just one of my favorite vessels to cook in and serve in.
What do you love about it?
I love that, like, it's so handmade that the lid of the pot doesn't fit on any other pot.
It feels special to include an object that really means something to one of our recipe developers. For this shot, since we're mashing up a classic Indian dish with a classic Italian dish, I wanted to play with that combination visually. I had the idea to use some of the tropes of a classic red sauce joint, you know, red and white checkered tablecloth, with Asha's curry pot placed where a heaping pile of spaghetti and meatballs might normally go. Jillian immediately got the idea and took it to the next level, adding a bottle of Chianti and some nice candles. Meanwhile, Asha has thoughts about how the noodles should be piled on the plate.
So not having them overly sauced so that they're weighed down, but having them, you know, be lightly sauced. I think there's a saying in Italy that you're not serving sauce with pasta, you're serving pasta with sauce.
So, Jillian, you are placing clusters of meat over the naked noodles, and then you're going to add sauce. Is that right?
Yes.
So this is interesting. You separated the more liquidy part of the sauce from the ground meat.
Right.
And why do you do it that way?
I just want to have a little bit more control over, like, where it's all going. And then I can apply the sauce exactly where I want it to be.
All right. We've done a number of trials. We've adjusted the yogurt. There was not enough. We put on more. It looked too perfect, so we smeared it. Then we wanted color on it, so we added some of the saucy oil. Now Jillian is holding a noodle and further smearing the yogurt around to make it look kind of oozy with the sauce. We're getting close. What do you think, Ashi? Think we got it?
I think we got it. I mean, it looks like I want to dig into it.
We have enough peas in there? Do you want a couple more?
I think we got it. Could maybe add a pea, like, right here in this saucy area.
Sauce?
A pea. Oh.
We're now at the point where we're like, it's close, but it needs one more pea. And Jillian is dipping, she has tweezers, she is dipping a single pea into the sauce so that it looks right naturally there. Sauced.
That's beautiful.
I love it.
Woo! I love it.
All right. We got it?
We got it.
We got it.
Mark it!
Five stars.
Okay. Now that all the pictures have been taken, I get to take my first bite of this. My personal plate. I won't be sharing, but I can make other people plates. I'm just going to be in my corner eating.
I'll turn the microphone off to give you privacy. Asha isn't the only special guest joining me at the shoot. Janie and the kids also make the trip out, so their hands can appear in a few of the photos. After all, they're key contributors to the book. And one area where they continue to have strong opinions is the title. You may recall that we debated title ideas back in episode 1. My leading contenders then were Beyond Bolognese and Put It On Pasta. We ended up mixing both. Janie likes saucy and pastabilities.
So what's the title of the cookbook going to be?
Still discussing.
Well, there's always room for improvement, so I feel like knowing you, you're always going to be unsatisfied.
Do you think that's what I'm like?
Depends on the thing. Some things that you really don't care about, you're like, I couldn't care less, leave me alone. The things that you care about, like the cookbook, then you get really passionate about. So.
At this point, I tell the kids that I've selected a title. Emily provides the drum roll. Anything is pastable.
Interesting. But it's kind of like the Mission Impossible thing.
I'm very happy with anything is pastable.
I'm happy for you. I'm just saying, if it were me, I would go with Beyond Bolognese, but that's just me.
I'm starting to think my kids have inherited Janie's well-honed skepticism. But anything's pastable is a clear winner to me. It's fun, cheeky, and also it really conveys what the book is about. The idea that you can turn almost anything into a pasta dish. Emily's right that it's reminiscent of Mission Impossible, our series about the making of cascatelli. But to me, that's a nice callback. So the cover will say, anything's possible. But what will the photo on the cover be?
The name is not as important as the look of the cover. Like, people are buying cookbooks now, like, they're beautiful. It's like a coffee table book. So the name is important, but also, like, just having it look really nice and pretty.
Will my book have the cover Janie thinks it should have? No. No, it will not. I'll tell you all about it after the break. Stick around.
And now, a delicious word from our sponsors.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. They've got over 7,000 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels, and you will get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. I especially love those Cambria Hotels. They have locally inspired hotel bars with all kinds of specialty cocktails, downtown locations right in the center of all the action. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces. That way, if you're a business traveler, you'll be able to get all your work done. On-site restaurants, fantastic. And then at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles and great pools for the whole family and spacious rooms. I mean, if you have kids, you understand the importance of the pool. If you stay at a hotel with a pool, almost nothing else matters. Fortunately, all the Choice Hotels take care of all the other stuff too. But I mean, a pool is a great start. Whatever kind of vacation you're going on, whatever kind of travel you're doing, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. A few years back, my friend Justin Warner from Food Network moved out to South Dakota. He opened a ramen joint, and he is always posting pictures of all the great food he's not only cooking, but eating all over South Dakota. He's always telling me to come visit. And you know, one of the best ways to experience a new place is to eat your way through it. But it's equally important to live your way through it, too. And when you summer in South Dakota, you can fill up on all the lake days, hikes, rides, and small-town strolls that'll leave you with a regained sense of wonder and a hunger to do it all over again. See why there's so much South Dakota, so little time at TravelSouthDakota.com. At Boar's Head, delicious is in the details. And you see that in their incredible selection of hummus flavors. Boar's Head hummus is expertly crafted to achieve the perfect balance of creamy texture and refined taste. You can taste those chickpeas. You can taste the tahini. You can taste a little bit of acidity. It's got it all. I especially love their roasted red pepper hummus made with fire-roasted peppers. You can even taste a little bit of that char. It's perfectly dippable. It's perfectly spreadable. This is the kind of thing you always want to have on hand in your refrigerator. Dip, scoop, spread, or smear Boar's Head hummus to your heart's content. Hummus so extraordinary, it can only be Boar's Head. Compromise elsewhere. Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies are so iconic that I just say Famous Amos and it's like I can taste it. Each cookie is filled with semi-sweet chocolate chips and a satisfying crunch. And the word satisfying is very key there because some cookies are crunchy and brittle, and I don't like that. But Famous Amos has a deep, tooth-sinkable, satisfying crunch that I know and love. And Famous Amos classic bite-sized chocolate chip cookies are bringing back the original recipe that everyone knows and loves. One perfect bite, everything classic in a cookie. Find Famous Amos cookies anywhere you buy your favorite snacks.
Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed at home in your Keurig coffee maker with Dunkin' cold K-Cup pods. Just brew it hot over ice and enjoy flavor that's crafted to serve cold. The home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. In addition to putting the finishing touches in the book, I've also got to start thinking about the launch of the book. I reach out to folks at Blue Apron. I'm friendly with them because they've done some meal kits with Cascatelli. And I ask them if they want to do a meal that features one of the recipes in my cookbook. I figure this could be a way to get some eyeballs on my book and a cool collab for them. And that's how I end up at the Blue Apron Test Kitchen in Brooklyn.
So now another dish just appeared in front of you, John. Is this your whole day?
A lot of the day. Yeah, it is a lot of the day.
I'm here with John Adler, the SVP of Culinary. And the recipe that John wants to include is my pasta pizza. That's the one you heard me working on in episode 3, where you take a mixture of cooked pasta, egg, and olive oil, spread it on a sheet pan, and bake it till it's crispy so it acts like a crust. Then you can top it like a pizza and cut it up and eat it like a pizza. In my recipe, I encourage you to add whatever toppings you like. So John and his team are doing just that. I look on as Lauren Katz, senior culinary manager, tests out the recipe. One tweak they've come up with is to add cheese to the mixture of cooked pasta and egg before it bakes.
Yeah, so John actually suggested it just to help keep the crust nice and crispy. It's a little more foolproof and it just provides more structure.
It's grated Parmesan?
Yes.
Okay, now my kids are going to need me to test that for them. pasta pizza, crust coming out of the oven. Oh, look at that. Are we doing pepperoni? And is it hot honey?
Yes, so we're doing...
This is like the hottest trend in pizza.
I know. We're not original for doing it.
No, but I love that you're doing this. I think this is a fantastic addition to pasta pizza. I was wrong. It's not pepperoni. It's sopressa, sliced nice and thin. Even better, to be honest. I take my taste. This is making me want to make pasta pizza again. This is a winner. And for the meal kit, Lauren's pairing it with a butter lettuce salad with a creamy ranch and pickled pepper dressing, plus tomatoes, cucumber, and crispy onions. And this whole meal kit is available to order right now. Plus, we worked it out so the folks at Blue Apron will give you 20% off the first 4 weeks of a new subscription when you order it. You can all get your pasta pizza meal kit at blueapron.com/sporkful. And make sure you go to the menu for the week of April 8th to order it. We have come to a very big moment. I'm back in the photo studio with Jillian and Dan. We are about to shoot the cover of the cookbook. I feel a little bit nervous. I have total confidence in all of us, but it just feels like this has higher stakes. You know, like if one of the photos for one of the dishes on page 143 isn't perfect, like it's okay. The cookbook could still be great. But people do judge a book by its cover. This is also the only thing that the publisher, they have to approve. There's more people who have a say in this, more people for us to please.
Take a deep breath, Dan. Yep. It's all right.
Be all right.
It's
yeah.
Gonna be okay.
I've already told Dan and Jillian that I want to have three dishes on the cover. That'll help communicate to people that there are so many different kinds of dishes in this book. Jillian's been putting a lot of thought into what color the tabletop and the cover shot should be, which is a big decision because that will essentially be the color of the cover. You both were very quickly in agreement on a rather daring choice, which is...
aubergine.
I like the eggplant purple choice, yeah.
Now we call this dark purple. Jillian likes it because she thinks it's striking but not distracting, and it makes the food really pop. She also says purple is not a color you see on many cookbook covers, so she likes it for that reason. And I'm game, but I've also heard a lot of stories from cookbook authors about just stumbling onto a cover image during the photo shoot.
It's nice to get that kind of creative inspiration and just go with it,
right,
and have it work out.
I think,
but
know,
I'm sure it also happens sometimes that people go into a shoot with a plan for the cover, and then that is what ends up being the cover, and it's good.
I mean, sometimes.
Right at this moment, my mind flashes to another photo that we took a couple of days earlier. It happened like the other, when we were shooting the cacio e pepe with chili crisp, and we were doing these sort of like long Mafalda noodles draped over chopsticks. They were like hanging down almost like a wall of pasta, and we were all like, oh my God, that looks amazing. And we're like, that could be a cover.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still a little stuck on the like three dishes, but I wouldn't rule it out. Enough chatting. It's time to get down to business. Jillian brings out the lob cascatelli, inspired by the Thai Laotian dish that has a lot of herbs and a lime garnish. Then comes the spinach artichoke lasagna pinwheels, a baked pasta dish that just looks really cool. Jillian has her blowtorch out to make the cheese look extra fresh and cheesy. Finally comes the scallion oil bucatini with a runny egg on top.
You ready to pop?
All right, so this is a very exciting, momentous occasion. We are about to pop the egg yolk that is going to run down on the scallion oil bucatini that's going to appear on the cover of the cookbook.
Alrighty.
We're actually going to get one drop of egg yolk onto a different part of the egg.
The golf announcer voice is like, it's killing it.
A hush has fallen over the crowd. I'm going to let you in on a little food styling secret. Jillian actually takes a bit of egg yolk from a second egg to increase the amount of runny yolk in the photo, make it look more decadent. But we can't go overboard or it'll look unrealistic.
I think that's good.
I think that's max, yeah.
Do we like the scallions floating in the yolk?
I do.
Okay. Dan's able to do a quick and dirty Photoshop job, laying the title in over the photo so we can see roughly what it all looked like as a cover.
I think it's beautiful. I think the color choice is amazing. The golden pasta looks great on top of it.
The purple background, you mean?
Yeah. With the pasta on it.
Yeah. It's like very inviting and like comforting, and but also just like, wow, what? That's, I didn't know I could make that, you know? Like,
right.
Wow.
As I said, the cover is the one image that the publisher, William Morrow, wants to approve. They've given us free reign to do whatever we want in all the other photos. And I want their approval. At this point, I've been working with my editor, Cassie Jones, for over a year. I really trust her judgment. We emailed the cover mock-up to Cassie and to a designer there named Ploy Sirapan. And now, we wait.
This is the stressful part. Because we think it looks amazing.
Yeah.
And there's always that slim chance where it's like, guys, what are you thinking? Just shoot it on white. It's like, right, oh, don't shoot it on white.
Right.
Let me check my email. We don't want to break down the spread until we hear back, because if they have notes or tweaks to suggest, we got to make those changes and reshoot. Once this all gets broken down and the food gets eaten, we're not going to have time to do this all over again later.
Well, you know.
So we keep waiting.
Does anyone have tents? We can pitch a tent. We can sleeping bags.
Let me see. Should I text Cassie also? Just emailed you a pic of where we're at with the cover, comma. Let me know your thoughts when you can, exclamation mark. I mean, maybe we should move forward. I mean, like, I feel we all feel really good about this.
Yeah.
Cassie has been generally, every single photo that I've sent her from the shoot so far, she has had nothing but positive feedback. So it's hard for me to imagine that she's going to suddenly look at this and be like, what? That's not working at all. Like, that seems unlikely. Oh, wait, you guys. I just got a text from Cassie. It says she's looking now. She's looking at the email. Let me refresh my email.
Does that have the three dots?
Looking at the three dots. It's the three dots. Look, what is it going to say? Oh, God. The suspense is killing me.
Oh, my God.
Imagine if it was just like, it's awful. No, it wouldn't be.
Wait, she's sending. She's sending
it's something. It's coming.
Oh, God.
Oh, my quick reaction is that I love everything but the purple.
Burn. It's fine. Let's switch it to yellow. Okay. What is she thinking?
She says it's a super unusual cover color, which happy to consider it, but it's traditionally not thought to be saleable, so I'd want other options.
But we can switch real quick. The lights are still there.
Jillian swaps in a blue surface to start.
Purple is better.
A few minutes later, we try red, which we like well enough. And then, all right, now we're trying green.
I think the team is pulling for purple and red.
I'm torn because it's like, I get that purple is not a common color. And so the publisher sees that and they're like, people won't buy this. It's too weird and different. And part of me says, well, yeah, everything's weird and different until someone does it and it works. On the other hand, like, I was scarred by my first book, which I wrote in 2014. And the reason why it's been so long between my first book and my second book is that nobody bought the first book.
What was it called?
It was called Eat More Better. The problem with it was that it was too weird and different. And it was, I could never explain it to people exactly what it was, so nobody bought it. Mm. And so, these publishers are not dummies. Like, they make a lot of successful books. Mm-hmm. And if no one buys this book, I probably won't get to make a third.
Mm-hmm. I understand what they're saying, but I'm also like, your book is different. Like, that's like also the point of this pasta book, is that it is different.
I send all the versions with all the different backgrounds to Cassie. Okay, so I got the final word from Cassie and Ploy. They said, of the options we sent, overall it looks great. And they agree that we can definitely get the cover from what we've shot. So at the very least, we can feel good that we have shot the cover.
Amazing.
Details TBD. And Cassie agreed that we will not abandon the purple at this time. You didn't love it the first second you saw it either.
Yeah.
So I can understand. On the other hand, you kind of want the cover to not need to grow on people.
Exactly. Yeah.
It kind of has to grab them.
You have
like 0.1 seconds.
Yeah.
By the end of our 8-day shoot, we've gotten every photo we need. Overall, I think it was a huge success. The photos have the vibe I wanted them to have, and the whole process made the book feel more real to me, which is very exciting. In the following months, while Dan touches up photos, I make last-minute revisions to the recipes, and the book gets proofread by a copy editor. In May 2023, with the text pretty much locked down, I've made a decision on the cover. Jillian, Dan, and I hop on a Zoom so I can update them. The design folks put together a few different options using a couple of different colors, including the purple one that we liked, a couple others, different fonts, different things. We were supposed to like give feedback to the publisher, so my agent said, like, let's talk first. So I got on the phone with him, and he said, I like all these options. They're good, but none of them seems like great. My agent's basic point is that the cover looks like a lot of other covers. It's not distinctive enough. It doesn't feel as fun and different as the book itself. It doesn't feel like me. As I tell Jillian and Dan, for him to have this opinion carries a lot of weight for me. Because in my experience, agents are mostly cheerleaders. This may be the first time an agent has ever told me that anything I did could possibly be improved. I realize he's right. And it's my fault. I was insistent on showing three dishes. But when you do that, you gotta shoot them from overhead. So you get an overhead shot with three beautiful plates of food, and despite Jillian and Dan's talents, it's always going to look like a lot of food photos you've seen before. As I told them, so we went back to the drawing board a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Dan, do you remember we snapped a certain photo of a different dish? And at that moment, I turned to you and I said, that actually could be the cover.
Was it the pasta? Hey, everything was pasta. But was it the hanging?
Right, right. Yes, Dan, it was the pasta.
You think maybe it was pasta? The hanging pot, the cacio e pepe.
Yes, it was the cacio e pepe with chili crisp. We had like that wall of noodles hanging down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This really is one of my favorite photos from the shoot. It's James Park's recipe, James, a.k.a. the pasta translator. He wrote a whole cookbook on chili crisp. And this recipe is cacio e pepe e chili crisp. We paired the sauce with mafalda, a long flat noodle with ruffles along the edges. And that one is a great photo. It's just more viscerally grabby. Mm-hmm. So we went back to that image and came up with something like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jillian says she loves this cover because it's so different, so graphic and striking. She just wants to jump onto the page and eat it, as do I. Most of all, as compared to the first cover,
it's like more fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes,
sure.
That's what it is. It's more fun. That's all. Yes. I just spent 20 minutes saying what you just said in 2 seconds, which is that the first one wasn't fun enough, and this is more fun.
Yeah.
So my photography team is on board. My agent also tells me that he approves, and the publisher does the same. There's just one other group of people whose opinions matter to me. I have here potential covers for my book. My family. Now, girls, I know you've been learning since kindergarten that you can't judge a book by its cover, but it turns out that's not true. In the case of actual books.
My whole life.
I have this whole plan about how I'm going to reveal the cover to them. Even though the decision is made, I'll tell them I want their input, because surely they'll agree with my final choice, and then they'll get to feel like they picked it. So first, I show them a few versions of the earlier rejected cover, so they can share their displeasure with it.
I really like the purpley one.
Uh-oh. Janie and the kids actually like the rejected cover. So I try to explain to them, I just don't think this cover conveys my personality, and there's actually another photo that I've decided to go with instead. Hearing that I've actually already made the decision provokes a near riot in the living room.
Now that I think of it.
You just asked us to choose all these and to tell us that you're not using any of them?
Like, this looks like a good cover, so I'm going to make a whole different cover instead of just like.
I wanted your opinion 2 months ago, but we weren't able to all get together and talk, so I had to make the decision on my own.
Obviously. You should have asked our opinion when we're taking photos instead of waited till everything was done to ask our opinion.
All right, do you want to see the cover of the book or no?
Yeah, but do we have opinions or this is definite?
This is definite. This is a mock-up of the final. Okay. Ready?
Wow!
I hate it. I actually hate it. Oh my God.
Are you why serious? Would you...
That's so mean!
Yeah.
Is this a joke?
No, this is not a joke.
I mean, that... Like, I can't even tell what that is.
Oh my God, it's so bad.
This is harder to read than the other one.
I feel so bad for you.
Are you joking?
No, I'm not joking.
You think this is better, Dan? Look at this from a distance. This on a thumbnail looks like vomit. Like, that was
that
my first
so
thought. Like,
mean.
This looks so pretty.
This is not my personality.
This is not the style of the book.
Dad. We don't care what your personality is. We care about what's going to be appealing to people's eyes. And this is not.
You know, I showed the pictures
to... You showed this to people and people said this looks better?
We made this switch. Every single person at the publisher and the photo team agreed that it was better.
Person. I mean, I feel like the Eat More Better cover, you wanted that to be silly and like, it's just people, I don't know. I don't know if people...
And
this
how
isn't
many
silly.
People bought it? A record 20 people and they were all in our family.
That is so mean. You are just crushing his dreams.
Did you know that people rub their thighs when they're nervous and that's what you just did?
I don't know. I guess we shouldn't even keep talking if you've already...
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and hit stop on this recording. Thanks, everyone.
This is obviously not the reaction I wanted. Even for my family, who are often my toughest critics, this was a real drubbing. But then again, Janie's telling me what people who buy cookbooks want. Meanwhile, she doesn't buy cookbooks. We've been together for 20 years, and I can't think of a single proper cookbook she's ever bought. All her recipes are scribbled on scraps of paper and shoved inside a black and white paperback cookbook from 1990 called That Hungarian's in My Kitchen. Still, my confidence is shaken. I go back to Jillian and Dan and tell them about Janie's concerns. They insist the cover is great. I go back to my publisher and say, are you sure this is a good cover? Are you sure you like it? They have more meetings and discussions. And my editor, Cassie, reports back, yes, we love it. She says it really stands out. And if some people can't tell exactly what it is, that'll be alluring. It'll make them want to learn more. So in August, I have my last stand with Janie.
What did they say about your book? You said they were looking at pictures. Are they changing the cover?
I expressed all your concerns to them, and they respectfully disagreed.
Really?
You know,
did they have any, like, focus groups or anything?
As much as we like to joke about, you know, your skepticism, like, you know, I want you to be excited about the book.
Yeah, I am. I want other people to be excited about it, so. Now, yeah, I mean, it does look better now. Like, I love the tagline, 81 inventive pasta recipes for saucy people.
I think that's the biggest endorsement I'm going to get.
No, I mean, I think it's going to be great.
All right. Thanks, babe.
Okay.
It takes a few more months to bring the book together into a cohesive final layout and triple-check everything. In the fall of 2023, the book goes to the printer in Thailand. All I can do now is wait. On January 4th, 2024, the first hard copies arrive at my house. The family all gathers in the kitchen.
All right, I'm opening it up. Ready? I'm nervous. I actually didn't expect you to be nervous.
Sasha's squeaking with a toy. Oh, wow. It looks really nice. Oh, the back looks really nice.
Holding the book in my hands is satisfying, but I'm also struck by the feeling of, like, all this work and it's so small. 3 years and I could misplace this thing under a pile of mail. For a moment, the accomplishment feels insignificant. But then I think about being in my kitchen and cooking from this book. My mind flashes forward many years when the kids come home from college and ask for their favorite pasta dish. And I pull out this same book, the pages crinkled and stained. It may be small, but it's permanent. Becky picks it up and starts flipping through.
This one was good, the prosciutto.
That one was so good.
Yeah. Oh, this one was really good too.
The miso.
What's
butter.
Mac and Dal? Did I eat that one?
I think so. Good.
That looks good too. Everything looks so good.
Becky, what are your thoughts on seeing the book and holding it in your hands for the first time?
It's really cool.
How so?
Because it's real. Like, before it was just, like, something you were talking about, like, something you wanted to do, but now it's actually, like, a real thing, you know?
And how does it make you think about, like, looking back on all the testing we did and, like, the discussions and the debates and the eating and re-eating?
Well, it makes it seem like, well, not that I think it wasn't worth it, but, like, it is worth it because it's, like, if you want to do something and you actually put in the effort, like, it'll happen.
Sounds like you might have learned something in this process.
Maybe so.
To me, like, one of the things that's really exciting about holding this in my hand is just to know that, like, all three of you also contributed really, really importantly to this book. Like, this really was, like, a family effort. Especially in the past few weeks as I've been working on the podcast series and listening back to all the recordings we made and just thinking about, like, how much feedback you had and testing the recipes and putting your hands in the pictures. And, you know, I feel like this is something that our whole family did. I mean, mostly me. But also you guys.
Well, at least you've got the self-confidence thing down.
Put it next to Eat More Better. See how it looks on the bookshelf.
Well, nobody else is going to have that experience because no one else bought Eat More Better.
Bro roasted his own book.
It looks nice on the bookshelf.
Yeah. It looks really nice. I love the spine. It has a good spine.
It has a good spine. And with that, I'm pleased to announce that Anything Possible officially goes on sale tomorrow, March 19th. But of course, you can order it right now wherever books are sold. You can also order a signed copy. Get all the info for all that at sporkful.com/book. I hope you like it. It has a really nice spine. Now, another way to get a signed copy of the book is to come see me on tour. I'm doing live Sporkful tapings and book signings all across America over the next couple months in conversation with some incredible folks. There's a good chance I'm going to be near you. Get info and tickets at sporkful.com/tour. Remember that if you want to see pictures and videos from my cookbook journey, from recipe testing with the family to trekking across Italy, follow me on Instagram at @thesporkful. And if you want to eat pasta with me in Italy, I've teamed up with the folks at Culinary Backstreets to create a tour where you're going to get to do just that. You'll eat many of the same pasta dishes I ate on my research trip with many of the same people. I'll even be there with you in Bari to eat spaghetti alla sassina together. The link is in the show notes, and there's more info at culinarybackstreets.com. And one final request. If you're new to our podcast and you've enjoyed this series, please take a minute to go to your podcasting app, go to our show page, and hit follow or subscribe or whatever it is in your app. You can do it right now while you're listening, then we can hang out more. Thanks. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of The Sporkful. I want to say a big thank you to the people who you didn't hear in this series, but who played a part in helping me make this cookbook. Nelson Lau, Marina Freitas, Caitlin Beyer, Royce Burke, Elvis Santoyo, Natalie Christian, Andrea Wynn, Andrew Janjigian, and all the incredible folks at my publisher, William Morrow, including Cassie Jones, Jill Zimmerman, Melissa Esner, Taylor Turkington, Sarah Falter, Ploy Sirapant, Renata de Oliveira, Shelby Peake, Jennifer Eck, and Anna Brower. The Sporkful is produced by me, along with managing producer
Emma Morgenstern
and senior producer
Andres O'Hara.
Our editors on this series are
Tracy Samuelson
and
Nora Ritchie,
with editorial help from
Tamika Weatherspoon.
Our audio engineer is
Jared O'Connell.
Original theme music by
Andrea Christensdottir.
Additional music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher Studios. Our executive producers are Colin Anderson and Nora Ritchie. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Valencia from Atlanta, Georgia, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Part of what I'm feeling is, like, I don't want you to be hurt by the process if, like, you feel like this is your last chance. It's not as much doubtful as protective.
You're protecting me?
That was so cute.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.